ചേതു ദർപ്പണമാർജനം വോമഹ ദവാഗ്നി നിർവാപണം ശ്രേയകൈതവ ചന്ദ്രികാ വിതരണം വിദ്യാവധൂ ജീവനം ആനന്ദാംബുധിവർദ്ധനം പ്രതിപദ പൂർണാമൃതാസ്വാദനം സർവാത്മാസുഫലം പരം വിജയതേ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ സങ്കീർത്തനം നാമനാമകാരി ബഹുധാ നിജ സർവശക്തി തത്രാർപ്പിതാ നിയമിതാ സ്മരണേന കാല ഏതാദൃശീ തവ കൃപാ ഭഗവൻ മമാപി ദുർദൈവമീദൃശമിഹാ ജനിനാനുരാഗാഃ തൃണാരമേഷു നീചേന തരോരവീ സഹിഷ്ണുന അമാനിനാ മാനദേന കീർത്തനീയ സദാ ഹരി നഥനം നജനം ന സുന്ദരീം കവിതാം വാ ജഗദീശ കാമയേ മമ ജന്മനീ ജന്മനീശ്വരി ഭവദാൽ ഭക്തിരഹൈതുകി ത്വയി ഐ നന്ദതനൂജ കിങ്കരം പതിതാ മാം ക്ഷമേ ഭവാം ഭുധൗ കൃപയാ തവ പാദ പങ്കജ സ്ഥിത ധൂളി സദൃശം വിചിന്തയ നയനം ഗലദശുധാരയ വദനം ഗദ്ഗദരുദ്ധയാ ഗിര പുളകൈർനിജിതം ഗദാ വപു തവ നാമഗ്രഹണേ ഭവിഷ്യതി യുഗായുധം നിമേഷേണ ചക്ഷുഷാ പ്രാവിശായുധം ശൂന്യായുധം ജഗൽ സർവം ഗോവിന്ദ വിരഹേണ മേ ആശ്ലിഷ്യ വാ പാദരതാം വിനഷ്ടു മാം അദർശനാം മർമഹതാം കരോതു വാ യഥാ തഥാ വാ വിദധാതുലം പടോ മൽപ്രാണനാഥാ സുനയേവ നാപരാ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദ നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ 13th chapter was Prakriti Purusha Viveka Yoga. It was called as Prakriti Purusha Viveka Yoga. Purusha and Jnana yeah. 14th chapter we talked about the Kshetra Kshetrajna, what was discussed there as Prakriti and Purusha. Prakriti, material nature, Purusha is the Antaryami. Krishna gave the title as Kshetram and Kshetrajna in that chapter. I'm just saying how these chapters are all connected to each other. At the end of that chapter, Krishna mentioned that Bhuta Prakriti Mokshancha, last words, Kshetram Kshetrajna Yor Jnanam or Antaram Jnanam Chakshusha Bhuta Prakriti Mokshancha Yevidur Yantide Param. The last verse he says. If you study that chapter, Krishna says, you will become free from that Bhuta Prakriti Moksham. Bhuta Prakriti Moksha means from freedom from Prakriti, material nature. And in the next chapter, Krishna discussed straight away what Prakriti is, the three modes of nature. So he spoke about Bhuta Prakriti Moksha from that chapter. And in the 14th chapter, Kshetra Kshetrajna Yogam, we better to use the Sanskrit terminology itself rather than using the English translation. Because Kshetra Kshetrajna, what Krishna addressed as Kshetram and Kshetrajna, is nothing but Prakriti and Purusha, what was discussed earlier. And when, at the end of that chapter, he said, you will get Bhuta Prakriti Mokshanja. Bhuta Prakriti, that is the most important word there. Bhuta Prakriti Moksha means freedom from the grip of this Prakriti, of Panchabhutam and three modes of nature. That is Bhuta Prakriti. Bhuta Prakriti means Panchabhutam. And Panchabhuta means this material elements and material body. This is all Panchabhuta, isn't it? Panchabhuta, five material elements. And Prakriti means, Bhuta Prakriti means the three modes of nature. So we are actually a product of these two. Bhutam, Panchabhutam and Prakriti. Prakriti operating through Panchabhutam and we are trapped in that. Krishna is saying freedom from that is moksha. Bhuta Prakriti Moksha. He mentioned that in that the 13th chapter. At the end of 14th chapter, Krishna spoke about Brahman. And he mentioned basically what he is saying, that this Bhuta Prakriti Moksham, in another way he has put it at the end of this 14th chapter. When Krishna discussed these three modes of nature. Gunatraya Vibhaga Yogam. Tattvam is one, but Krishna is presenting it in different angles, from different ways. It's presented to us, so we get the connection between all these things to understand that, yeah? So, Bhuta Prakriti Moksham he spoke before. In Gunatraya Vibhagam, which is this chapter, 14th chapter, what we discussed now, which we have finished now, that this Gunatraya Vibhaga Yogam, what he has spoken about, is all about these three modes of nature, which is Prakriti. There it was Buddha Pragati. Here he is talking about the Pragati only. How to become free from the three modes of nature, right? So now we are going to another way, which is Purushottama Yoga, Krishna is saying. Purushottama Yoga is the next chapter, right? That's the name of the next chapter. If we can remember the Sanskrit names, it's much easier of all these chapters. Precisely, it tells you what the chapter is saying. Otherwise, it can cause a little bit of problems. Sometimes you get confusion from that. Yeah. So anyway, what is the topic in the Bhagavad Gita? Bhagavad Gita is saying that when we have a salsangam, when we talk about these things, right? Why do we study Bhagavad Gita? That question will always come, is it not? So, different answers for that. For example, different institutions, they will present Bhagavad Gita differently. You can see that also. One institution will talk in terms of bhakti. Another institution will talk in terms of jnana margam. Or another one will talk about in yoga margam and things like that. Yeah. And therefore, what happened now, if you go in the open public, if you talk about Bhagavad Gita, they will say, Bhagavad Gita is for personality development. Or they will say for management, you become a good manager if you study Bhagavad Gita very well. Right? Or they study Bhagavad Gita for competition purposes. In different ways, people take to Bhagavad Gita. Right? So, it is important to understand where they are coming from. Right? In order for people to take Bhagavad Gita seriously, most of the people don't take it seriously. They just study Bhagavad Gita, some verses here and there, and they say, this is what Krishna is saying, and I'm following that. That finishes there. Well, what Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad Gita, nobody thinks about it, what Krishna is explaining to us, right? So, but in order to give an impression to people that this is what Bhagavad Gita is saying, therefore, they have brought up all these things like personality development and management and anger management, pain management, and all sorts of things. People use Bhagavad Gita for that purpose, right? So, otherwise, if you tell them Bhagavad Gita is for adhyalpam, adhyalpam means self-realization. If it is for that purpose, nobody will take any interest. That's the way it is. Because in their mind inside, they think there's a loads of different types of religions in this world. Which one is correct? Which one is wrong? We don't know that. And that's how their mind is. General people mind is like that. So when you tell them this is Brahma Vidya, the science of self-realization is Bhagavad Gita, they'll have a little bit of reluctance to take it very seriously, right? So, but when you give interpretations like this, anger management, pain management, and personality development and all that, it actually spoils Bhagavad Gita. You are actually destroying Bhagavad Gita's position, you know, because Bhagavad Gita as Brahma Vidya it is. Yeah. So, that is why in the commentary it says that, idam Gita Shastram. Gita is a shastram, it is, right? Samastha Vedartha Sara Sangraha Bhutam Durvijnayartam Atyantam Uparamalakshanam. All these are in the commentary. Ajari Swami says like that. Yeah? Samastha Vedartha Sara Sangraha Bhutam Durvijnayartam Uparamalakshanam. He completes that in his Upodghatam itself. In the introduction itself, he said Bhagavad Gita is very difficult subtopic, it is, to understand, to absorb it. And Durvijnayartham is very difficult. Because why is it so difficult? Because it is a summary of all the Upanishads is in Bhagavad Gita. Added to that, there is Patanjali's Yoga Shastram there, Mahabharatam is there, and Vedavyasa, Jaimini's Karma Sutram is there, Jaimini Sutram is there, Vedavyasa Maharshi's Vedantam is there. So Bhagavad Gita, if you start analyzing, you can see Krishna has taken from everything and put it together in 700 verses in front of us. And that's why it makes it more complex it is, to properly get to know Bhagavad Gita, right? So Gita Bhashyam, he says like that. So many people who study Bhagavad Gita like that, there are, you can see this, not only Brahmanas, but Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, or whatever whom you call Hindus, you can say like that. They all study Bhagavad Gita for various reasons, right? And people, not the Hindus only, who are born in Bharatabhumi, not only them, that there are people from other countries also, other places, also study Bhagavad Gita for various reasons, right? What you have to realize here is that those people who got converted into other faith, like Christianity, Islam, and all that, right? And even for them, and even if you belong to the animal kingdom or the birds, whatever it may be, they all, in Vaidika Sampradayam, they all have a connection with Bhagavad Gita. It will take some time to understand this, to properly see that connection. Whether you are born in the animal kingdom, birds kingdom, or any living entity in this world, what to talk about other faiths, even they have a connection with Bhagavad Gita. What that means, whether they agree with or not, that's another thing. That will change because people have different way of thinking differently. So they may agree or not, that's another thing. But if you study Bhagavad Gita properly, you can see the connection. Bhagavad Gita has a connection with all living entities in one form or the other. They have a connection, right? So, and whether they agree or not is another thing, right? The moment you are born, you have fallen into Bhagavad Gita's cycle. You are within the periphery of Bhagavad Gita. Right, so Sanatana Dharmam, that's why it's called Sanatana Dharmam. It was not an invention by an individual. Nobody invented Sanatana Dharmam. No one started this. One person didn't start that. And it is not under the banner of one person, or it is not only limited to one book either. Sanatana, basically, as you know, the meaning is timeless. Sanatana means timeless, right? So, it is for this reason only that when we talk about Srimad Bhagavatam, when they say that, then we'll say that it was given to Lord Brahma, Krishna is instructed to Lord Brahma, and after that, Brahma did the creation. That's how it is spoken, isn't it? In the Bhagavatam, Krishna has instructed the knowledge to Brahma, and after giving instructions, Brahma started the creation, right? It is for this reason that if you accept this thing called creation, if you accept that, then even before creation, this knowledge existed. Even before creation, this knowledge existed. Vedam existed even before that. So, Vedam means, what does Vedam mean? Vedam means, it's not just not the sound only. Sound is what Bhagavatam refers to as Shabda Brahmam. Shabda Brahmam, it is referred to in Bhagavatam. That is only one aspect of that. Like Lord Balaram says to Chitraketu, right? So, in Krishna will say in the Bhagavad Gita that who knows Vedam? He says, Vedescha sarvair ahameva vedyo. He uses that word, isn't it? Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto matrasmadir jnanam apohanam cha Vedescha sarvair ahameva vedyam. When Krishna said that, most of the people take it in one way. They're saying the form person, Krishna, understood it that way. That person, only Krishna the person knows Vedam. That is not how you understand that verse. Yeah, that is there, person is there. But if you take it like that, it becomes like religion then. It has become a religion. Like others have started different religions, in the same way Krishna has started a religion. It becomes like that. That is the problem. So that is why that word aham, which we have discussed in this chapter, is so important. Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita from the platform of aham. Aham sarvasya prabhavo. Aham alpa gudakesha. Everywhere he prefers to use the word aham rather than that person as Krishna. That person Krishna. So he is going to say that who has understood Bhagavad Gita properly. Bhagavad Gita, studying Bhagavad Gita is not so important. But more important that it should benefit us. By studying Bhagavad Gita, it should benefit us, is it not? So, in this world normally, we have two kinds of education. One is that which saprayojanam it called, and the other one is abhimana prayojanam. What that means is, just like I got sick, I go to a doctor, and he has given me medicines, and I got cured from my illness. That is called saprayojanam, that it's benefited me. That medicine has benefited me, my visit to the doctor was useful, and he has cured me from my disease, right? But that's one way. The other way is that I don't have any disease, right? But for the sake of passing time, I am collecting information from the world everywhere. For vanity's sake, in this way, I am trying to acquire knowledge, and in that process I am also studying Bhagavad Gita. So which is a totally different method, right? The first one is that like the doctor has treated you and you got cured from your illness, it has helped you. If that way Bhagavad Gita is used, it's beneficial. But just like any other various literatures in this world, if you study Bhagavad Gita also, and only use it for propagation purposes, without getting actually the benefit of Bhagavad Gita, then it will be a waste of time, right? Just like if you study medical science only for the sake of propagation and for name and fame, then it is only a waste of time. It's not helping anybody. But if you help the people with curing the illnesses, it gets benefited, right? So Bhagavad Gita, you can use it for either way, right? And that is why it is, when you can see in the YouTube and in the media, a lot of times people reciting Bhagavad Gita, it is recorded and then it is put on the YouTube for people to hear. That's all in one level only. That's only in that level, right? And from that, what is the benefit? You get to know the verses, what is spoken in the Bhagavad Gita. It's not helping you. The person is not helping, right? So, because we do not know the highest benefit of Bhagavad Gita, how that can change us, our way of approaching towards this life in this world, right? Or that yogam, andariga yogam, that is a yogam related to our real existence, right? Therefore, we are giving importance to these less important, silly things, what we give importance to Bhagavad Gita. We use Bhagavad Gita for propaganda purposes or silly things like that, without fully realizing the power of that knowledge what has been given in the Bhagavad Gita. So, they are all external benefits, like you put it through the YouTube or YouTube through the reciting competitions, Bhagavad Gita, and things like that. But if the message is not getting through to the people, then rishis are saying to us that if you look at Bhagavad Gita from the point of view of the rishis and the point of view of the acharyas, great personalities like Shankaracharya and others, if you look at from their position, what they are saying to us is that Bhagavad Gita is capable of completely relieving your distress in life. That's how they put it. Completely capable of relieving all our distress in this world, right? First thing they all say to us that if you have taken birth in this world, distress is a part of that. That's the first thing to recognize. If you come to this world, you cannot choose. You may get some happiness, but a lot of distress. That's a part of the offer, part of the package, right? And that is why we have got this name Jandu. Jandu means one who has taken birth. We are all Jandu. Although it's offensive to say to someone he is a Jandu. If you say like that, it's considered to be like an animal, isn't it? Jandu. Jandu is referred to animals, right? But in the Bhagavadam, freely, Kapila Maharshi is in the third canto, you'll say, Jandustuti comes there. Jandu Ruvaja, it says, referring to us, very freely spoken as Jandu. Because spiritual knowledge is not there, he is a Jandu. No matter who it is, whoever it may be, if he has no spiritual understanding or spiritual realization, he is just a Jandu, not better than that, right? So, Jayate Idi Jandu. In Shastram, they will very openly say to us, Jayate Idi Jandu. If you have taken birth, you are a Jandu. Right? So, and whoever has taken birth, he gets it free. What? Dukkham. Distress. It's available freely. You won't have to worry about it. Right? And if this Dukkham is not there in life, suppose there is no Dukkham, no distress at all, nobody will come to hear Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam. That's also a fact, isn't it? Because we know there is Dukkham, it's a part of the life in this world, right? So, that is why it is mentioned there, Atyanta Ubarama Lakshanam. If you look on the Ubodhadam, it is says that the Samastha Vedartha Sara Sangraha Bodham Durvijnayartham. And then he is saying that Tasya Gita Shastrasya Samkshaptam Prayojanam Param Nishrayasam Sahedugasya Samsarasya. You see, Ajari Swami very precisely defined that there. Samsarasya Atyandam Ubaramalakshanam, he said. Freedom from material existence you want? Bhagavad Gita is for that. Samsarasya Atyanda Ubaramalakshanam. How to come out of this samsaram, material existence itself, that is what for Bhagavad Gita is meant to be. Not for any all the other things. It's only when you have that benefit, you got the benefit of Bhagavad Gita. He says here, Atyanta Upanam Tatcha Sarva Karma Sanyasa Purvagat Alpa Jnana Nishtha Rupat Dharmat Bhavati. So, and so he defined it in that way. And then he mentions there that the Atyanta Uparama Lakshanam, as he mentions there. So this Adhyalpa Shastram is capable of completely uproot the distress what we have to go through in this world, in material existence, right? And that is why it's called Adhyalpa Shastram. Adhyalpa Shastram it is, right? Adhyalpa means what? Adhyalpa means that much fact, that thing what is related to soul, atma. That's called adhyalpa. Adhyalpa means the knowledge related to the soul, not to the body, related to the soul. So, and what that means is, related to the soul means what is related to us in reality. We are the soul, we are not the body, isn't it? So, when they say adhyalpa means that is related to Atma, which means it is related to you, actually, every one of us, right? So, this is the only Shastram in the creation that is actually related to us, right? All other Shastram what we have in this world is all about things what is not related to us. Even if it is about the body, body is not us, ours, isn't it? It has come from Prakriti and Prakriti will take it off. So any science what you have developed around the body is not centered around you. It is centered around the body. Similarly, all the other science in this world related to various things, economics, history, and science, modern science, biology, zoology, whatever it may be, they are all related to things which is separate from you. Which is separate from you, right? So, strictly speaking, only Adhyalpa Vidya is the only thing actually centered around you, really speaking. Really, strictly speaking, This science, Brahma Vidya or Adhyatma Vidya, is the only Vidya what is centered around really about you. All other things are centered around something else. What is centered around the body, centered around the mind, centered around the intelligence, they are all separate from you, separate topics they are. Strictly speaking, the only science that teaches us about us, Adhyatma Vidya, is Brahma Vidya. And that is why this is such an important book, Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita's importance to understand why we can't compare Bhagavad Gita with any other book. Therefore, Acharya Swami says here, Brahma Vidya, Sarva Vidyanam, Brahma Vidyam Pradishtam. All other Vidya is separate from you. But Brahma Vidya is about you. You are Brahma Vidya. About you, the science around you is Brahma Vidya. All other things are dependent on this Brahma Vidya. Because if you are not there, all other things don't exist. All other Vidya has no significance. If you are not there, is it not? So, Brahma Vidya is about you, therefore it's more important. And all other Vidya is dependent on this Brahma Vidya. That is why Brahma Vidya is so important. Yeah? So, that is the topic that is discussed. And proper knowledge about us, of the real self, right? And that is a topic in the Vedam, in the Upanishads. Upanishad, Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Sutra. These are the three prasthanatrayam. That means the three prasthanam comes from these three. They all talk about the same thing, but in three different ways. Bhagavad Gita, Upanishads, Brahma Sutram, which we call as Vedanta Sutram, right? So, all these things, out of this, Bhagavad Gita is nothing but an extension of Upanishads. Krishna has taken Upanishads and summarized it, basically. You know, if you study Bhagavad Gita, you will notice it. Kathopanishad is there, Chandokyam is there, Shedashudra Upanishad is there. All Upanishads, Krishna has taken and summarized it in Bhagavad Gita. Right? So, so in one sense you can say, it is Krishna's commentary on Upanishads. That's another way of putting it. Krishna's commentary on Upanishads. Having taken all the Upanishads, major Upanishads he has taken, and from that knowledge he has put it together and given it to us in the form of Bhagavad Gita. So, yeah. So, similarly, when we talk about Vedantam means what? Vedantam means end of knowledge, is it not? There's no knowledge after that. There's nothing to inquire after that, right? So, Vedantam, when you study Vedantam, what they will talk about is that it takes you to a level where you become free from this curiosity to know more goes away from you once for all, because you got the final conclusions and you have realized it, and then you don't want to know anything anymore. That's what is called a jijnyasa nivritti. You don't have any jijnyasa anymore. Jijnyasa has finished there. Then they will call few things like that. Jihasa nivritti, prayapsa nivritti, chigirsa nivritti. Nivritti. Nivritti means you're getting released from all other things, right? So Vedanta means that it's a medicine for this, right? And if you take these medicines, what the benefit is, only you will get the benefit first. That's another thing, you have to remember this. This medicine is for you. And if you take this medicine, you will get the benefit, not anybody else. That's the way it is, right? So, it is based on the soul, it is Atmanishtam. It's not like science, modern science. There's a difference between modern science and the Bhagavad Gita. So, just for example, in science, say, for example, you can say any invention like Edison found developed this bulb, electric bulb, isn't it? It's Edison's invention, it is, right? But that bulb, what Edison has invented, it was not only benefit for him, others also got the benefit from that. The bulb will burn for Edison as well as for anybody else, what he found out, right? Same thing with computers also, we have found out, if everybody has got now. desktop has all gone and laptops have come and taken over. And now that's also going and something else is coming. All of that, right? So, that is Baudhya Vidya. Baudhya, material knowledge is like that, right? And just like when you are identifying with the body, if I'm hungry, if I eat the food, only I will get the benefit. Others won't get the benefit, right? Similarly, with the mind also, if I pick up something, I will get the benefit, right? You won't get the benefit, I'll get the benefit, right? So, all these things is not Brahmavidya. All this is not Brahmavidya, right? This is a vidya that has to work inside us. Which one? This Brahmavidya. It is a vidya that has to work inside us, right? And what is the swarupam? What is the nature of this vidya? Vidya is very simple. In Krishna says, in the 9th chapter Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has spoken that Raja Vidya Raja Guhyam, he said. Remember that verses, yeah? They are so important. When he is referring, what is Krishna has to say about Bhagavad Gita? That's what that verse is. Raja Vidya Raja Guhyam Vavitram Idam Uttamam Pratyakshavagamam Dharmyam Susukham Kartum Avyayam. He began that chapter like that, the 9th chapter, right? So, the speciality of this Vidya, Brahma Vidya, Krishna has spoken in that chapter, in the 9th chapter, right? First of all, he calls it as Raja Vidya. He calls it as Raja Vidya. In other words, compared to all other Vidya, all other knowledge what you collect, acquire in this world, compared to that, this Vidya will shine in a person more. It is much more powerful in a person, this Raja Vidya, right? In other words, this Brahma Vidya, once it has come to someone, he will ignore all other Vidya. He won't be attracted to any other Vidya, provided he gets Brahma Vidya. If Brahma Vidya gets into a person, he will know that all other Vidya is inferior Vidya. They have no value anymore. Because Brahma Vidya does that, he liberates a person, all other Vidya is considered to be avidya. From the Shastram point of view, you got to know this because Brahma Vidya, why it is different from other Vidya? That is why they divided that into Paravidya and Aparavidya. Aparavidya is all avidya it is. None of the other things will help you to get Brahma Vidya. And that is the reason they are all categorized into avidya. Aparavidya, avidya. Bhagavad Gita Bhashyam says so. Aparavidya is avidya it is. It is because of that avidya we have got this problem today, not able to relate with Bhagavad Gita. We are having problem because of that. Because so much avidya we have pumped inside, now we have to clear up all that avidya first to understand. That's why when you say to someone, there is a soul in the body, he's saying, what is this soul? I have not seen that. They are arguing like this. Even though there is such an ample proof in the Bhagavad Gita that Antaryami is there, without Antaryami, the person is dead, the dead body is lying there. Who left the dead body? You ask the question, they have no answer for that. He says, oh no, these things came together and there was life in that. Life doesn't come like that. That's a misunderstanding. So, therefore, Krishna mentioned there that this Raja Vidya, Raja Guhyam, he said, the next word, it's a royal secret, he said. Remember that? Raja Vidya, Raja Guhyam, he says. It's a royal secret. And why it is called a royal secret? In the olden days, when the kings ruled, a lot of things happens in the palace. And if anybody reveals that to the public outside, gone. Head will be gone. That's how they ruled. And sometimes some princess may have some affair with somebody. And that that is not supposed to happen because Kshatriya kings, they will marry among the royal families only. So if there is any relationship by princess with someone, they fall. And then if the people who are in the palace, if they reveal that outside to somebody, and if the king finds out, gone. Be gone. So it is similar to that, this Brahma Vidya also. Krishna is saying that. It is similar like that, this Brahma Vidya. Why? It cannot be revealed. You should not reveal it to anybody. It's an open secret. What it means is, even if it is revealed to somebody, you won't get it. That is the problem with Bhagavad Gita. You can read Bhagavad Gita, you can listen to Bhagavad Gita, but you won't get it. Therefore, he is saying, even if you can get it, unless you come into contact with it, with this knowledge in the Bhagavad Gita, right? So that is why he is calling it as Rajaguhyam. Naturally, a question comes, if it is so confidential, why Krishna is speaking this so openly? That question will come, is it not? If it is so confidential, and then Krishna is speaking very openly to everybody, and Krishna is saying that this is the nature of this Brahma Vidya is such that even if you say this to someone, you cannot get it unless you have connected to Bhagavad Gita properly. Unless that knowledge goes in, the benefit won't be there. You won't understand it. That means the effect of Bhagavad Gita is so strong, Brahma Vidya, because it's about us, you see. And we have lost that completely. And we thinking that I'm this body, I'm this mind, I'm this intelligence, and this world is very real. And in that conscience, we are living in this world. So that shows the amount of avidya what is inside us. So, so when he said that it is Rajaguhyam, extremely confidential, he didn't mean that, not that you hear through the ear, not in that way. For example, when Upanayanam ceremony is performed, when the Brahmana boys are initiated, right, second initiation as we call it now, Upanayanam ceremony, the Brahmachari is sitting there, the father is there, and normally the father is the guru at that time, and then there is an Acharya who is performing the ceremony, all that. So all three of them together, the Acharya, the father and the son together, the Gayatri is recited to him, to the child who is listening to that, and in the form of Chandas. I'm talking about the traditional system, not what is happening in the modern days, right? So you may or may not know, I don't know whether you are aware of this. Traditionally, when they give Gayatri Mantram, they will put a cloth on the head and cover the face. Yeah, the reason for that, that is a symptom of this Rajaguhyam, that it is a confidential thing, it's not for everybody. Therefore, they put a cloth on while they recite the Gayatri Mantram to the Brahmachari. It is done like that, normally. Traditionally, if you go back into Brahmana families, when they initiate, that is the system. They'll cover the face with a cloth while giving the Gayatri Mantram to the person. Yeah. So now Gayatri is given in mobile phone. So now it is a different world. We are completely changed, right? And some people have got the ringtone Gayatri Mantram in their mobile phone. So it has come to this level now. What you're supposed to do? So modern world changes everything. Yeah, they use the Gayatri Mantram as a ringtone in the mobile phone, and they think that they are making spiritual advancement by. So whenever the phone rings, you are listening to the Gayatri. So this is the modern way of understanding things, right? Because some people think like that, I am always listening to Gayatri Mantram, so that shows that I am very spiritual. And so things like that, but that's all superficial, completely superficial, right? So here, what Krishna is talking about is something different, yeah? He is saying here that whether you are a Hindu, Christian, Muslim, or whatever you may be, man, animal, or bird, or plant, or a tree, wherever there is life, this science applies. Bhagavad Gita applies to all. In what sense, right? So, Gayatri Mantram is Chandas, Chandoba Baddham it is called. Like a Chandas it is. That means everything is very structured. And you know in Bhagavadam Krishna talks about that in Ekadasham. Gayatri, Anushtupa, Chandas, what they are, depends on how many letters. Anushtupa is the 32 letters. which we call as the verses now, 32 letter verses, right? And then there's other things also he has said that in the 11th canto, right? So, Gayatri is a chandasa, says Vedam, and even if you have not understood that, doesn't matter, but while reciting that, it should be correct. You cannot mispronounce it, or you cannot chant the mantra in the wrong way. The sound has importance there, right? Otherwise, it won't be benefited. That is why, you remember what happened. It is in the Bhagavatam, this story. Our Bharata, King Bharata, right? When he became Jatabharata in his third birth, his father tried to teach him Gayatri. It's only 32 letters in that. 60 letters, I think. Yeah, in that. Yeah, Om Bhur. When you look at it, it's so simple, right? But even though his father tried to teach him that, Gayatri, so months and months, he could not pronounce it properly. He could not speak that Gayatri. And then his father gave up. Father got so frustrated, and because of his frustration, it affected his mind, and in that depressed state, he died. Bharata's father. Now, if you study Bhagavatam, it is good, because there what you will come to know is, Bharata has gone beyond Gayatri and all. You see, Bharata, he was called a Jata Bharata, isn't it? That Jatatvam in him, he exhibited Jatatvam outwardly, inside he was realized. So therefore Gayatri is not anymore. When do you need Gayatri? Till you realize the self. Once you have realized the self, you don't need Gayatri anymore. Gayatri's purpose is finished. Purpose of Vedam is finished. Purpose of chanting is finished. Once you have realized the truth, Antaryami, right? So Bharata was in that state. For him now, Gayatri has no meaning anymore. So that is why when his father tried to teach him, he was not taking any interest in that, because it's not affecting, it's not beneficial to him anymore, nor it has any, it's not going to have any input into his spiritual life. So he has gone beyond than that. That is why it is said like that, right? So, but how long does it take to teach Gayatri someone? Nowadays we print it out in the paper, right? And you ask 10 devotees to chant, 10 people will chant 10 different ways. The same Gayatri mantra. Because to get that, the tongue has to agree with it. When you speak each syllable in the Gayatri mantra, when you pronounce that, the tongue has to agree with it, right? So therefore, if you go into Veda Padashala, where they teach Vedam, the teacher will sit individually in front of every child who is in the Veda Padashala, and he has to make sure that the sound he is coming out from his mouth is correctly representing that letter. If it is not, he has to make adjustments with his head. He will twist his head, and you may think that it is child abuse. It's not child abuse. He is trying to train that child how to bring the correct sound from his throat. It has to come out this correct sound representing that letter properly in the what is spoken in the Gayatri mantra. It is a difficult one. It takes sometimes months to get a child. The child is only 8 or 9 years old who is learning this Gayatri mantra, right? So till he get it right, they won't let him go. Till he gets it right. So that is how they study this Gayatri. Anyway, here Krishna is saying that the this vidya, Brahma vidya, hearing is one thing, right? Then reflection on Bhagavad Gita is another thing. To reflect on this Bhagavad Gita's knowledge or what we have heard, to reflect on that is another thing, and then experiencing that is another thing. It's all three different levels, isn't it? First of all, you hear Bhagavad Gita, something has gone inside, right? And most of the people, it's gone as soon as you go. It's over, finished. I heard it today, that's it. And then you have forgotten completely. Some people who are very serious, they will take it and think a little bit more, take Bhagavad Gita and look at it and start analyzing things. Mananam will happen. That means Shravanam has gone one step further, what we call as Mananam. But Mananam also, up to a certain level only, it can go. But after that, when it goes into experience level, Mananam, and then comes Nididhyasanam, what they call it. When it comes to experience level, then it is a different situation altogether. So, while hearing it is one level, while reflection on that is another level, experiencing it is in another level. So, three different levels it happens in that way, right? So, Narayana Guru talks about that. He says that even if you are not able to realize this Bhagavad Gita's knowledge, right, somehow or the other you should sit with people who has realized it, if that an opportunity, and even if you taken something out of that, he says that your life will become benefited. Shanti, peace or samadhanam will come from that, right? So, life is considered to be like Krishna said in the third chapter, it's like a sacrifice it is, is it not? Life is like a sacrifice. Sacrifice means, in what context Krishna said that? Krishna is saying, if you use this life, you perform Vedic sacrifices, right? Different types of Vedic sacrifices. All that purpose of that sacrifice has got a particular goal. Different Adhiratram, Agnishtomam, Vajapayam, Rajasuyam, Ashwamedham, all different types of sacrifices, they all have got a goal in that, with a certain purpose. And for that purpose, you are performing that sacrifice. Krishna is saying, this life itself has to be made a sacrifice in that way. Yeah? And and that sacrifice is yajnam. Shastram, it's called yajnam. That yajnam has to be completed, and it is only complete when you have realized the truth. What is that truth? To realize who you are. Self-realization, in other words. Right? So, therefore, this knowledge, what the rishis are giving it to us, is considered to be the topmost knowledge, and there is no knowledge after that. Brahma vidya sarva vidyam pratishtam. A very strong definition like that. Yeah? Nobody will, from in the Vedic tradition, will accept any other knowledge superior to Brahma vidya. Brahma vidya comes to a person, he is complete then. He doesn't need anything after that, right? So, if this Brahma Vidya comes to a person, all other Vidya is not any more important for him. Everything finishes there. So, that is the reason, normally, in the Vedic education also, Vedantam is taught at the end. Grammar, and similarly, Ayurvedam, and Gandharva Veda, music, and Niruktam, Jyotisham, Kalpam, which are the different branches of learning in the Shastram. First, they will teach all those things. But this Brahma Vidya, science of self-realization, is taught at the very end of everything. Because after that, the other things are not any more significant, right? That is the sampradaya. The system is like that, right? Now it has become like colleges, schools, everywhere. So, in the olden days, before colleges and universities and all has come, right, they will, once they are sent, children are sent to the Gurukulam, they won't teach Vedantam there. First they will teach them the Vedic literature, Sahityam, for example, the literature side of it. Then Tarkam, logic, arguments and all that. Then Ayurvedam, these things they will study first. And only after that, Vedantam will be taught. And Vedam was never taught. Instead, grammar, Vyakaranam, Sahityam, literature, Tarkam, logic, and astrology, Jyotisham, all these things will be taught. Vedantam will be only taught among the students, those who want it. Only those who want it, they will be taught. There are two reasons for that. One, many of them are not qualified for it. Adhikaritam, they will look at it. Everybody is not qualified to acquire this knowledge of the self. They are not ready for it. Yeah, Adhikaritam is there. Then, another side to it is that if they study Vedantam first, then they will not think about studying anything else. There is another side to it also. Once they study Vedantam, first of all, to get people qualified to study Vedantam is very few. Everyone won't be able to take to it, right? Because it requires a different frame of mind, mindset, right? So, therefore, they won't teach them, everybody. Secondly, once they have learned it, then, after that, they won't show any interest to learn anything else. Because that's the strength of Vedantam, the power of Vedantam, right? Because the moment you have understood Bhagavad Gita properly, you will have no value for any other knowledge. That's the beauty. Because you are realizing what the truth is, once it is realized, then Vedantam, that's what it leads to. Then after that, you don't want to know anything in this world. Even if somebody tells you any other knowledge, you will have no interest in that, right? So, that is the power of this Brahmavidya, right? Either you will become a Rishi, or you will become a Jnani, or you will become a Jivanmukta, liberated soul. That is how effective this Brahmavidya is, right? So, what is happening is, while you are living in this world, in this body, at the same time, your connection with the Antaryami, Krishna inside, is established. That's the benefit. While living in this world, in this body itself, you have become free from the body and you have got connected with the source, Antaryami inside, right? So, and when you come to that connection with the Antaryami at that time, it makes that person perfect and he doesn't want to know anything after that. Yeah? And so when just like children, when they talk to each other, they will talk about many things, what they have learned in the school, what they learned from the science and things like that, right? And there will be very serious discussions because they will think that, because they are taking the science very seriously. And scientific discoveries and all that will have an influence on their way of thinking. And you can see people argue on that basis, is it not? In this world, when you want to convince somebody, you will say it's scientifically proven, we will say like that. And you may have some documents or some authority to prove that what you are saying is accepted in the scientific society. That's how you present it, like that, right? But Brahmavidya is of a different category. That's the difficulty with Brahmavidya. You can see how Brahmavidya becomes more and more difficult as you get closer to it, right? So, when you are, those who have realized Brahmavidya, okay, who have got this Brahmavidya, what will happen to you is that for them, they will see this science, modern science, and they will see this world in a different way. Like how? When children, when they are playing, when small children, when they are playing, they will take the role, I am father, you are mother, and you are the children in that way. They make a family together. The children themselves make it while playing together, right? So, one who has realized Brahmavidya, one who has realized this Brahmavidya, for him, this world will be like that, like child's play. The world is a child's play for him. He has come out of that, right? So, you know how children, when they play, they'll say, we cook rice. Children, small children, they do like that, right? And so for one who has realized this Brahmavidya, and for him, there is no science after that to know anything more than that. So, therefore, because that's all avidya it is, you see. Therefore, it is customary practice that you don't teach Brahma Vidya in the beginning. You teach all other avidya first, and then only those who are qualified among them, ready for Brahma Vidya, only they are taught Brahma Vidya. That is the traditional method. Otherwise, what will happen is it will be abused. All misunderstanding will come, because Brahma Vidya requires a different nature in a person. Yeah? So, therefore he is saying here, first he should come through avidya before you get to know Brahma Vidya. He should come through avidya before you come to Brahma Vidya, right? sometime in the life, this Brahma Vidya must come, right? So, because only Brahma Vidya will satisfy us at the end. Shanti will come only from Brahma Vidya. And all other Vidya will put us in Prakriti. That's the problem. Only Brahma Vidya takes us out of Prakriti. Prakriti, you know what we discussed last chapter, three modes of nature. All other Vidyas in this world, if you study, it will keep you inside Prakriti, in the three modes of nature. Brahma Vidya is the only Vidya that makes you free from Prakriti. Makes you free from Prakriti. Remember Krishna said Prakritistam. He used the word Prakritistam. That's the word Krishna has used. Prakritistam means one who is inside the Prakriti in the three modes. And Brahma Vidya makes you Swastam, situated in the self. Right? So in these two words, Prakritistam and Swastam, the two words which we have come across in the last chapter, right? In there, everything is covered. Prakritistam means everything what else. Swastam means Brahma Vidya. Swastam means Brahma Vidya. Swastam, just we ask people, in normal conversation, people ask, you know what happens? People after retirement, one person got, he retired from his working life. He was probably 65, 70 years old, whatever it is. He got retired. Then he has got free time now, because then somebody else, his friend met him on the road, and he says to him, asked him about how are things and everything. He said, oh, I'm retired. So this person says to him, you are Swastam now, aren't you? That means you are living without any trouble. And that's all he means by that. Bhagavad Gita, when he says Swastam, is different. It's not that Swastam. Suppose you are retired and living a quiet life, family life at home, peaceful, having your meals at time, sleeping on time, and relaxed about everything. That is also called a Swastam. But that Swastam is not what Krishna's Swastam is. Krishna's Swastam is, when you are not Prakritistam, you are in Swastam. When you are not, but this person who is retired, he is not free from Prakriti. He is still Prakritistam. But they will address it like that. This is the problem. You see, many words in Sanskrit, when it comes to mundane world, vyavaharam, whole meaning changes. Guru, the word has meaning has changed. Pandita, the word has changed. Every single word in the Shastram, when it comes into our colloquial language, the meaning gets changed. Is it not? You know. Yeah. Now everything, there is a guru. You say he's the guru of what you call the basketball, or guru of the football. And things like that people are saying. How guru has got to do with football and basketball? So that is how it is. The word, how the meaning changes, right? So, so Prakritistam means, Prakritistam, where is your Shraddha? That's where you are. Bhagavad Gita says, where is your Shraddha? That's where you are. For example, I'm sitting here, I'm thinking something happening in Mumbai. That means, what does that mean? I'm in Mumbai, basically, right? So, that means I'm in Mumbai, if I'm thinking about Mumbai, right? And sitting here, if I'm thinking about something, I am there, right? And that is what's called a Prakritistam, right? Suppose I'm thinking about my body all the time, what is that? I'm Sharirastam. I'm Prakritistam then, right? And if I'm thinking about the mind, what the thoughts are coming, I'm Prakritistam. That is all Prakritistam, it is, right? And in Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti, in the three states also, the Jiva is Prakritistam. You know that? In Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti, the three states also, the Jiva is Prakritistam. He is in the Prakriti. Because these three modes are happening, within the three modes you are. These three states are coming from the three modes, is it not? So therefore you are still in the Prakritistam, right? Only when self-realization happens, you come to Swastham. What Krishna said in the last chapter. Remember? Swastham he spoke about? That Swastham. In the last verse, end he mentions that, isn't it? Last verses. Samadukha sukha swastham. That verse. Swastham. So Krishna swastham is different. He say when he has become free from the three modes of nature, then you are in swastham, not otherwise. Yeah. So having said that, he says that because once this Brahmavidya goes in, right? It is only given to a person when his knowledge of spiritual life has come to a certain level. Otherwise, it won't work for him. Early days, if you give that, it may not have its desired result, right? And even in Ayurveda, I mentioned this before, that the if suppose sometimes some disease somebody has got, right? And you have tried all treatment, it's not working. Nothing is happening to him. That because prarabdham is so strong, treatment is not working. If it comes to a level, what the Ayurveda generally does is, at that time, they'll give Vedantam as a medicine to them. At that stage. Because treatment is not working. Right? Not like these days, what we do is, we'll try. And then the doctors will use your body for their experiment. They'll say, we'll try this out. If that's not working, let's try this. In other words, he's doing research on your body. You are dying. Anyway, you are suffering. So he say, the doctor is thinking, he's suffering anyway, what can I do? So another drug manufacturer, he'll bring a new medicine into the market. And he must have heard about this. And they're all working together very well in that process, right? So they will induce him, you try this medicine for this disease. Because sometimes you can see, two people have got the same disease, right? You gave the medicine, it worked for one person, it didn't work for the other. It happens like that. From that itself you can understand that the curing of the disease is not purely due to medicine. Medicine is not, Vedam will not accept it. Antaryami cures the disease. If Antaryami decides he should have the sickness, you have to suffer from that, you've got to go through it. You have no choice there. Only Antaryami sanctions that. That is why in Vishnu Sahasranamam, what it is said? Beshajam Bishaka. Doctor is Krishna. Medicine is Krishna. If it all has to work together, Krishna has to approve that. Only then you get free from the disease. That is the Vedic knowledge. Vedic conception is like that. Not that this medicine doesn't work, Pfizer has brought another one, I'll try that. Or Glaxo has brought another one, we'll try that. If that works, if that doesn't work, we'll get something else. So there's so many medicines also available in this world. Finally, if everything is not working, it's dead and gone, what can you do? this is how medicine works. I mean, it's nothing new about it, nothing special about it, right? So in Ayurveda, the approach is, they are a little bit more conscious of these things. That they believe in Antaryami. And they know that most of the Ayurvedic physicians have studied Vishnu Sahasranamam. And they very explicitly mention there that he is the doctor, he is the medicine, and the curing process is also him. Beshajam, Bishaka, everything is him. And because they are conscious of that, what they will do is, they will try all the medicines. If it's not working, they know that it is his prarabdham to go through. He has to suffer from that. So they will, at that time, give Vedantam as a medicine to him. So that at least the man dies, leave this world in the right consciousness, of knowing that he is not the body. That's the idea of doing that. That he can live in Sattvagunam, at least you are live, if you have that concept inside, that I'm not this body, and able to live this world, what that means is you are living in Sattvagunam. And that Sattvagunam will help him, at least he is going to a better destination, with that understanding. Yeah. So that's the reason behind that. So, and therefore, to realize that perfection is this Antaryami inside, that is the truth, what we are looking for, to realize that truth inside, right? And we establish in that, and it is ultimately required. So, and the old age, at the old age, you can't do anything about it. By then, our, we are close to the expiry date, isn't it? Like all the other things, medicine also, when it is very close to expiry date, you will keep thinking about it. It's very close to expiry date. It's just the same thing with our body also, in the same way, right? And nothing will work sometimes. So this vidya is required. and this vidya, therefore Bhagavatam says, you should have it when you are very small. Kaumara Ajaret Prajna. Prahlada said that, is it not? You know, Prahlada talked about us in a very... We are all, in Prahlada's language, we are called, you know what the word he has used? Kudumba Ramas. We are also Ramas, but the only thing is we are Kudumba Ramas. We are not Atma Ramas. Atma Ramas are those who are absorbed in the self. Kudumba Ramas are those who are absorbed in the family life. So he has put that very strongly in the seventh canto, that being a Kudumba Rama is not helpful for spiritual life. Yeah. Some point in time, one has to become free from this Kudumba Ramatva. Kudumba Rama means that is no choice, no chance, he said, right? So, So that's what he mentioned to his children. He mentioned to other boys there, right? So, so Prahlada says this to the children, and we will start discussing this chapter tomorrow. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.